Have you ever lost irreplaceable data due to a hardware failure? This week on the Backup Wrap-Up, we discuss the unfortunate story of the popular YouTube channel Life Uncontained and their crash that led to losing a month's worth of valuable video footage. Mackenzie and Spencer faced a devastating setback when their laptop's SSD failed, taking with it weeks of raw video footage documenting their off-grid home build and precious family memories. We'll explore the importance of proper backup strategies, the lessons learned from this incident, and how you can protect your own data from similar disasters. Let's make sure this doesn't happen to you. If you're not familiar with me and why I'm so passionate about this subject, first, I'm W. Curtis Preston. During my first job as a backup admin, my company lost an important database that I couldn't restore. Since that nightmare, I've done all I can to make sure that will never again happen to me or anyone who will listen to me. This podcast turns unappreciated backup admins into cyber recovery heroes. This is the Backup Wrap-Up. Welcome to the show. Support for this podcast comes from Sullivan Strickler. Are you a Source One customer trying to decide what to do since Dell announced its end of life this year? One big problem is that the Source One UI is not designed for such mass migrations, making them slow and costly. The good news is Sullivan Strickler has figured out how to extract data directly from the Source One database much faster and less expensive than the alternatives. For a detailed report on your options, go to backupwrapup.com/source1. I'm your host, W. Curtis Preston, a.k.a. Mr. Backup, and with me, I have the person who's going to help me get through this horrible moment in my life.
And what is this horrible moment in your life?
You know that beautiful blue all-electric vehicle that I have?
Yes.
It's someone hurt it.
What happened?
I don't know. It's after it was in a parking lot or something, and it just sort of, it's got a, like a dent.
Oh.
And.
Ouch. Can it be PDR'd?
I don't think so. What's PDR? What have I told you about throwing out random?
Paintless dent removal.
Yeah, it's on a crease. It's right, like it's literally the worst. Like, you know what I mean? Like where it happens to be, it's on the wheel well. And it's right on the crease of the wheel well. Somebody slammed something into it. And
you might be surprised. Those PDR guys are pretty magical.
I would be very surprised.
Is it noticeable?
Oh, it's noticeable. It's very noticeable. There was paint transfer. Yeah, there was paint transfer. It was white.
Did you have Sentry mode on?
So I was in a parking lot, and I was under 20% power, so no Sentry. So I've reported it to my insurance company, and Monday I have an estimate. It's interesting, that particular body part, it's the worst body part for this to happen to because it's
attached all the way up.
Yeah, it's attached. Well, it doesn't go all the way. I took a look at it, and it's actually better than I've seen in some cars. Basically, it's one part, but it goes all the way down underneath the doors, all the way up to the front of the front door. But it doesn't continue on after that. So it's one piece. So I think, yeah, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what they say in terms of the.
Are you sure you want to get it fixed?
I'm tired. Yeah, I can't. You know what I mean?
You can't see. Is it on the driver's side? What's that? Is it on the driver's side?
No, it's on the other side. It's just, I'll just say this. I'm going to get an estimate. I'm going to see what the insurance company says. And I'm going to see what they say in terms of how long I'll have to do without my Tesla.
Like, if they order the parts, like, your car is drivable.
Yeah, everything's fine.
So you might just have to...
Yeah. Or if they're going to actually fix that part, it's just that because it's on a crease, I don't see them properly molding that part without... But I could be wrong. You know, who knows, right? If they take, if they're able to take the part off and mold it and make it all beautiful, I don't know. But I think the most likely...
So if they take it off, they're replacing it.
Yeah.
If they're doing PDR, then what they'll probably do is drop the wheel liner, try to get in from behind to push it out, like with one of the little sticks.
Yeah.
As they're hammering around to try to push it out while they're pulling back. At least that's what I've seen other PDR guys do on all the random YouTube channels that I've
watched. One of your many skills that you have but don't actually have.
Yeah.
Your skills that you possess only mentally. So
Jack Builds It is a really good YouTube channel. Yeah. He does some amazing stuff with bodywork.
So. You know, if this car was like 5 years old and this amount of damage happened to it, I'd be like, screw it. But the thing is not even a year old yet, and I have to live with this. But you gotta help me get through this, man.
You'll get through it. It'll be fine.
I'll see how that goes. So this is on the tail end of our cloud disaster series, but this really isn't a cloud disaster in any way, really. It just does technically involve a website that is in the cloud, but the data loss occurred before it ever even got to the cloud.
Yeah, and this is actually probably an episode that I pushed for just because it is a YouTube channel that I've been watching pretty much nonstop weekly for the last 3+ years.
Yeah. So why don't you tell us a little bit about who these people are? Just tell us about this YouTube channel.
Yeah. So as people who listen to the podcast probably know, I tend to watch a lot of YouTube. A lot of it tends to be car related, but there are a couple channels I watch which are kind of building related, like people building homes or other things like that, or furniture. And I don't know, I'm always fascinated with like the fabrication aspect of things. So this channel is called Life Uncontained, and it is a couple from Florida who sold everything and they moved to Texas, and they live in the middle of nowhere off grid.
Nice.
And they decided, hey, we want to be green, environmental. We don't want to be tied down with things. So they're like, we're going to build our own home. And unlike most people who'd be like, hey, let me go figure out like a tiny house, or let me go buy land and just move a house on it, or just buy a property with land or with the house on it already. They're like, hey, we want to build a storage container home.
Nice. They're not going to fit everything inside one storage container, right? Or they're going to put some storage containers together?
So they bought two storage containers for their house. So the two people, it's Mackenzie and Spencer. Mm-hmm. And so they bought land, they have it all situated, and they bought two used storage containers. I think one was from like the Evergrande company. Mm-hmm. So one of those large shipping container companies, and they decide, hey, we're going to cut it out. A good part of the floor plan is the storage containers, but they've done things so it doesn't look really like a storage container. Like the inside looks really nice. It has tall ceilings because there's a gap between the two storage containers with the vaulted ceiling. They've put an extension off one side. So there's like,
okay.
Yeah. So, and then there's also like a room outside with an attached porch. So not everything is in the confines of the two shipping containers, but they've used that as like the core structure, and it's sitting on top of cement pylons. And so it's above ground and it's well insulated. They have framing inside. So it looks like a normal place. It's just the outside bones instead of it being like wood, like you would normally do in the Bay in California or whatever else you use in your area. They just use a shipping container as a starting point.
So they put like some sort of siding on the outside so it doesn't actually look like a shipping container?
So for most of it, it is the shipping container. For the bottom parts, they kind of have wood pieces. But the outside is like a shipping container that still has the doors, the big open doors on one side.
They can.
But the bottom, it's all completely like spray foam, so it's super insulated. There's a roof on the top, like a normal looking roof with the pitch to it. It has normal windows, so they cut out openings for windows, all the rest. But they're completely off the grid, right? So they have to harvest their own rainwater. They have to filter it out. They have solar. There's a barn that they lived in for, I think, the first like 5 months while they or 6 months while they were building it out. So,
and this is a really popular YouTube channel.
I think it's like 1.5 million subscribers. Yeah.
Which for those of you that don't know, is way more than enough to monetize and to help fund this this project, right? This is actual income for them. This is not, in fact, I would think.
So they left their jobs. I don't remember what they did, but neither of them really had experience in like construction at all, right? So Spencer learned how to do everything from framing to how to do plumbing, electrical, how to hang drywall, right? Finishing off drywall. He did pretty much everything. How to install a roof, how to deal with all your water containment and everything else. Like, it was pretty, like, just watching the videos, like, it's backbreaking, but amazing just to look at how much they've grown and how much they're able to do now versus when they started. Like, they started in 2017. Right. And so it's been quite a while, but yeah, they have, I think, 261 million views on YouTube. So there are a lot of people who watch.
Yeah. It. So this is a big, small business, right? This is not just some dude making some videos and, you know, and by the way, you know, for those of you that don't know, you know, this podcast, for those, most of you listen to this as a podcast on some sort of podcast app. If you don't know this exact, you know, podcast with the same content, if you want to look at our lovely mugs, you can watch this on YouTube by the same name, right? Backup wrap up on YouTube. But I think it's just important to understand before we get into what happened is that this is a big channel. This is a couple that this is how they were making their living, was advertisements and whatnot, basically the various ways that you can monetize a YouTube channel.
By the way, they have two kids now with a third on the way. And they still continue to do all this work and release weekly ads. And they bought another property, not quite sure where, that is completely remote on a mountain that they are getting another shipping container built out in their current location, and they're going to move it to the new location so that they can also stay there.
Yeah. I mean, once you've created a YouTube channel with that many followers on how to take a shipping container and turn it into a home, the only thing you can continue to do is to continue to make other shipping containers or to take other shipping containers and turn them into homes. And so how were they doing, like, the production of this show?
Yeah. So it was all filmed by the two of them. And so there was, each episode, I would say it would come out once a week. It was probably about 22 to 25 minutes each, right? But to get the 22 to 25 minutes of content, right, they would do entire week's worth of shooting, right? So every little thing they would shoot, they would get raw footage, right? And then Mackenzie, the wife, was the one who would normally do all the editing. And so she had her laptop that she would use, and she would edit. Before, it was in a barn. Between the barn and the house being built, they lived in a small camper van for a little time.
Hopefully that's before
they had kids. But she basically did all... No, they actually had their first kid and they were living in that camper van. Wow. Yeah, the first kid had just been born and it was too hot in the summers, I think. So they had lived there because that had the only place with air conditioning. They lived there. They didn't have, so this was before Starlink. They had some cellular service where they could barely get internet out there. Sometimes they had to drive into the major town in order to be able to actually do uploads and other things like that. So, it, like I said, it's in the middle of nowhere, right? And so they were doing everything on their own, and they had all this footage. And it wasn't just only footage for the channel, right? It was also they were taking videos and memories, right?
Yeah.
Of like their time doing this project with the kids, right? So not everything, and they had two dogs, by the way. So not everything actually made it to the channel, right? They had a lot of footage that they kept for themselves. Right.
But it appears that this footage was either in only one of two places. It was on SSD cards as they were filming, right? Whatever their video camera, or I don't know if they weren't using an iPhone, right? They were using some kind of, yeah.
No.
Yeah. So they have a video camera that's got an SD card in it. And then they're going to download that SD card onto their laptop. And it appears that they just had a nice beefy laptop with a lot of storage on said laptop. And it was, based on the story, it was an SSD card, right? That was the main storage on that laptop. And anyone who has listened to this podcast before knows where this is going.
Yeah. Just to correct you slightly, okay, though, Curtis, so there was actually a third location. They do have external hard drives that they do offload raw footage to. Right. But when they are in the, like, there are previous data, but when they're in the process, right, they've taken a video, but they haven't created the YouTube yet, right? That data lives on their laptop until Mackenzie can finish processing it, creating the final YouTube output, and then publish it.
Yeah. So I guess just to make my statement more correct, all work in progress is in one of two places, either on the SD card or on the SSD in the laptop. Completed work is then transferred to hard drives. And what happened?
So, like I said, I watch them weekly, and it's one of the things I get the little notification. I'm like, hey, let me go check out their video. So I went, and they're like, yeah, sorry. And I think this was in October of 2023. Right. They were like, yeah, sorry, we lost our data.
Yeah, I think the title of that episode was We Lost Everything, right?
Yeah. And I initially, when I saw that, I was like, do they have a fire? Like, they have batteries there. They're living on a farm in the middle of nowhere, right? And so I was like, did the house burn down? Like, what happened? Did the barn burn down? Did they have wildfires? But no, their computer crashed and burned.
Yeah. And by crashed and burned, you don't mean literally burned, but just sort of crashed and burned the figure of speech. This is interesting because this is not what I would call the typical data loss story of like an average Joe. The average Joe used to have hard drives, and hard drives just die. They just do their mechanical devices that, you know, somebody, I forgot who told me this recently, and I really liked it. They're like, hard drives do two things. They, you know, or the, well, three things. They read data, they write data, and they die. Right? And I think if the sort of the belief is that SSDs are far more reliable, right? And they are, right? I mean, just statistically speaking, SSDs fail far less often than hard drives with moving parts, but they do fail. We don't entirely know, because they're not technical people, we don't entirely know what happened here to the drive, but it was, to use their words, like fried, right?
Yep. And on top of that, so I know for this podcast, normally we try to keep a couple episodes sort of in our backlog that are ready to be edited and published just in case one of us has a conflict. So they normally record and then publish, right? That week's content or the prior weeks. But because, like I mentioned, they're building out this new place in this remote location, they basically had like 4 weeks worth of content sitting on that laptop that was ready to be edited and published, right? Which normally never happens. And so now they had a bunch more content that they've lost all of a sudden.
Yeah. So they didn't just lose, you know, 1 week's worth of content. They lost, it sounds like, about a month's worth of content, maybe even more than that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, this is a bit like the episode that I just published that's going to go live on the 22nd. You know, we talked about the research data and, you know, the company deduce and how that these researchers and doctoral students, how that they lost data that is sometimes irreplaceable. You think about what happens in these people's lives. They're filming a story as it's unfolding, right? They're filming, I'm building.
They can't go backwards.
I'm filming this wall. I'm building the roof. I'm putting in the plumbing. Well, the plumbing's put in now, unless you're going to rip out the plumbing and go back, right? And refilm it. That data is irreplaceable. And they lost it. And boy, did they seem, I did watch that episode. Boy, did they seem defeated. What did they do at that point?
So they called up, I think, a repair shop, and they took their laptop in, and I think they said that their motherboard was fried, that data is not retrievable, right? And they were just heartbroken, right? I think one of the quotes was, I feel so dumb saying this, but I should have known better. Like, clearly I trusted the computer a little bit too much.
Yeah, clearly.
I did want to bring up thing from a previous comment you made about SSDs and people thinking they're invincible. Yeah. So, like you, I own a Tesla. I don't talk about it much. But for a while, I was running Sentry mode, and I had one of those USB flash drives.
Yep. Right?
That drive died within a year. Like, completely inaccessible. Plug it in. Nothing shows up. It's just, like, kaput.
Yeah.
And people don't realize wear cycles matter, right? How many times you write to that drive. There's only a finite amount. Now, if they were editing videos, copying data, and then copying out, constantly doing this week in, week out, because the laptop was from 2019. Mm-hmm. So it was 4 years old. They're copying data all the time. I'm guessing at some point they just hit the wear limit on the drive itself.
Yeah, that's possible. And by the way, the a person who has had a couple of dash cams over the years, one of the hardest things an SSD does is record streaming video nonstop, right? And so the funny thing is with your car.
Plus heat.
The funny thing is with your car, the number of hours of video that it had to record weren't that many. So that's kind of funny. But if you're using an SSD, a solid state drive to record streaming video from dash cams, there is a like an extra level of endurance level that they call it, like that's specifically aimed for dash cams, right? I doubt that the free SSD that you had was one of those, right?
Well, so it was a USB stick, and yes, it wasn't. So now I actually run an SD card, like you mentioned, that's intended for high endurance.
Yeah.
Right. And so that does a lot better and has been going on for like 3 years strong.
So. Yeah. So the part that bothers me about this story. Yes, obviously, we know that had they had a workflow that included backing up the data along the way. I will say this. I'm very sympathetic to the challenges of backing up data as you're working on it, especially backing up significant amounts of video data as you're working on it. When I had my own company a few years ago, we used to do a lot of filming in the field. And one of the hardest things was to get multiple copies of the data The way we did it, which kind of interesting, the camera that we used had a twinning feature. So you could put two SD cards in there and it would film that. And what we would do is we would pull one and that would be the just in case copy. And then we just wouldn't overwrite it for a shoot, right? And make sure that we didn't pull that stuff out until, you know, we didn't overwrite it until we had made sure we had a more long-term physical copy. But most people don't have that, right? Yeah. And it's a lot of data. So it's very difficult.
It's shooting at 4K now, too.
Yeah, exactly, right? You know what they should do? They should get a RED camera. This will solve all that.
So here's one of the other things is that going to your 3-2-1 rule, mm-hmm, Curtis, mm-hmm, they're not following the 3-2-1 rule, even with they had an external backup, right? A fire hits their home, takes out their hard drive, which might be in the same building, or let's just say they put it in the barn, right? Then that still has the same impact. They need to take a copy off site. And maybe now that they have the second location that they've built up, maybe they take their external hard drive and they keep it there. But then it's that practicality of how often are you going back and forth and updating that copy and keeping it consistent.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you have to find that balance between usability and security, right? It's the problem that we deal with everywhere. And I would think that the one thing that they definitely should have done is to make that second copy on a different type of device, right? On a hard drive versus an SSD, for example. And yes, I do think that they should have that other copy, but that other copy could be less frequently updated. But at a minimum, don't let your only copy of data be sitting on a device that if it goes, you're going to lose a month's worth of work. That could have helped them, right? Because, you know, they're so remote. Giving some sort of cloud backup, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, especially with video. And the best they could probably do is Starlink, and even that is not good enough for the amount of data they have to move. The reason I was laughing is I know you talked about keeping it on external hard drive. So the husband actually admitted in the video, Spencer, that 6 months in, he accidentally erased that external hard drive and they lost all the footage. But he's like, I've never done that again, so it's good. But like you said, human mistakes happen. If they had their other copy, then at least they wouldn't have lost those 6 months worth of data, the raw footage.
Yeah, I think the one part, and I started to say it a few minutes ago and got sidetracked, squirrel, is that the one part about the story that bothers me the most is that, you know, they took it to, their some sort of support shop. And I don't think that the support shop, it's highly unlikely that the support shop was skilled in the art of data recovery, right? The one piece I would have also liked, and it killed me because we knew about the story. I was trying to reach out to them. They're so popular. I was trying to message them. I tried to go to them through Facebook, through LinkedIn, through every way that I could do. And I'm like, hey, have you tried this? And that would be the one thing that I would have liked to have seen them try. And I'd like for others to think about this. They weren't between a rock and a hard place. They were just under the rock. Right. They had lost a month's worth of work, a month or more's worth of work. And what they could have possibly, given that this was a revenue generating amount of video, that data that was on that SSD had a monetary value that they could have turned into, you know, a business justification for talking to one of the various data recovery services. Now, I don't know how much people know about these services just in general. Do you want to just talk about what we're talking about here?
Yeah. So these are companies that specialize when other companies say your data is not restorable. Right. They're the ones who you call to actually be like, hey, let me try to get whatever I can get off of these drives. They may not be able to get everything,
right?
But they will try. So typically with hard drives, right, when you used to hear the clack, 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 and then your hard drive would crash, yeah. Right? These are the guys you'd call, you'd send them your hard drive. They disassemble the hard drive in a clean room, put it the pieces back together in a separate hard drive and try to restore your data. Right. I don't know exactly what they do on the SSD side, but I'm sure that they have similar mechanisms as well to read the data off of SSDs.
Yeah.
Even though your laptop could not technically read the data.
Yeah. That's the part that bugs me in this story here is that it's partly because of the Apple architecture. And for those of you that don't know, all of the Apple, motherboards, the main hard drive is soldered into the motherboard. It's not something that can be unplugged and handed to somebody. But so the computer person, all he can judge is what he can see via the mechanics of that motherboard. It's highly possible that hard drive was fine, or that SSD was fine, but that it just needed to be connected to something that could properly read it. And that's what these hard drive recovery people would be, is that they would be able to, I'm assuming, unsolder that drive from the motherboard and then connect it to something else that can read the drive.
Yeah, or at least maybe get some of your data back out. Maybe not 100%, but some is better than none, you know?
Yeah, and, we're talking about companies like OnTrack, Secure Data Recovery, Drive Savers. We'll put some links in the show notes to the types of companies. These are the companies that, I've spent my career trying to help people not to need, right? But they do exist for this exact scenario. And the only thing that truly bothered me about this story is that it didn't seem that anybody was advising them to at least try one of these services. And so we'll never know if they could have potentially gotten that data back.
Well, maybe they still have the laptop around. Mackenzie and Spencer, if you just happen to run across this episode, ping us, let us know. We'll try to get you in touch with the right people to see what they can do.
Yeah.
And hopefully you still have your laptop and maybe you can get your data.
Yeah, I actually reached out to the folks at Secure Data Recovery. I know them pretty well. And they actually offered, for promotional consideration, they offered to do this for free. So if anybody sees this and knows them, then, that offer is still open. And it would be interesting if we could get a semi-happy ending. I mean, at this point, that footage is probably not as valuable as it was back then. But,
But all those other memories you have of your kids and you and Spencer, right? You could get those back.
Yeah, exactly. So we talked about what they could have done, right? We talked about that. I think that it's a real challenge when you're doing data, in a remote situation like that, where you're creating a significant amount of data in a remote situation. And so the only solution that would be appropriate to their scenario is, like I said, copying the data to a local hard drive to make sure that you don't have that. And yes, I probably would make multiple copies and put another one somewhere else, even if it, like you said, it's just in the barn. I'm assuming the barn is more than just a barn, given who we're talking about, right?
Well, the barn was already existing on the site.
Like, is it like really so leaky and stuff? That's what I'm saying.
Okay. Yeah.
So maybe that's not the best place to put the other copy.
It's like a metal barn.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And so let's talk about what others can do. So one of the very common things that people at this point are doing is actually using the iPhone and their Android to film stuff, right? And both of those do have the idea of getting the data replicated out there. We had an entire episode dedicated to properly backing up your iPhone or your Android. And really what that came down to, as far as I remember, was it just, you know, we looked at a bunch of different options, and the answer that we found that worked for both was iDrive. That it handed it handled both the iPhone, the Android, as well as the Mac and the Windows desktops, and for an incredibly affordable price. And because I think the key for anything is that you want to make it as sort of unobtrusive as possible, right? Is that the right word? Unobtrusive? Inobtrusive?
Seamless.
Let me just hang on. No, I was right. I was right the first time. Unobtrusive. Yeah. If we can do automated stuff, the more automated it is, the better, right? And that's what I like about the iDrive method. I just put a piece of software on my phone, and then it just does it, right? And it does the same thing on my Mac. Yeah. But if you have to do a manual, if you have no other choice, then you have no other choice.
Yeah. The one other thing I was going to mention, and I don't know if this is going to be a problem for Mackenzie and Spencer, is a lot of times people keep reusing their same SD cards for their cameras. A lot of the other channels I watch, so I watch a lot of YouTube, right? So a lot of them, right, they'll be like, oh, my SD card failed, or I lost all my footage because the SD card died. So you might also want to periodically replace those cards proactively rather than waiting for a failure, because you might lose your first copy of your video right before you even get a chance to put it on your laptop.
Yeah, and if you are doing this for a business, I would highly recommend you look into a model of camera that records simultaneously to two SD cards, because that basically also helps deal with what you talked about. If you have one die on you, at least it only dies on one of them and not the other one.
Hopefully.
Double disc failures do happen. Can we think of any other lessons that we can draw from these folks?
I think just if it's important data to you, back it up.
Yeah.
Right. Don't trust one copy. Back it up immediately.
Yeah. And I would say that we often say that the backup requirements and the backup design should be dictated by the business. And in this case, the business was making money, right? And they were making a living doing this, and they really should have seen that data as it was the product, right? And when you just have to think about that, whatever you're doing that you're creating that is, you know, your product, then that really needs to be backed up, right? And you need to figure out a way. And hopefully not wait until like this kind of disaster happens before you start thinking about that.
Yeah. And I think one of the quotes that they had at the very end was, "This is never going to happen again." And I hope it never does, that they never run into the situation again.
It would be interesting to see if, like, which one was the one they're like, okay, after this happens, we're doing this like 17 different way. That was Deduce, wasn't it? Yeah.
Deduce.
So it'd be interesting to see if, you know, if they have an overkill solution the way Deduce did, after it was like, okay, we're going to replicate it here. We're going to do real-time replication at three different locations. And then we're going to have a historical snapshot. And then we're going to store it, you know, like we're going to test recovery weekly. That all sounds good. It's just
cost.
What's that?
Dollars.
Yeah, it costs money. And it's just also, it's a shame that you had to wait until you had a major disaster before you had a proper backup design.
Yeah.
So that's what we're just trying to, and then also I'm just going to add, you know, backup security, right? Just make sure that at least one copy is stored in a way that if you do have some sort of cyber attack, that it's not going to be able to take that copy out. And that is either via actual disconnected, offline, actual air-gapped storage, or via some sort of actual immutable storage as well, that even you can't delete if you wanted to, right? So, all right. Well, you know, once again, a little information at the misfortunes of others, but you know, it's a good story. I remember you sent me that link, and I was like, oh, that really hurts. That really hurts. I really, you know, it's the thing that my whole career, it's like anytime I see people that lose data where a relatively simple fix would have stopped that data loss, it hurts a lot to see that.
Yeah.
So I don't want that to happen to any of our listeners. So listen up, folks, back that stuff up. well, thanks for the chat again. And thanks for the story.
No, thank you, Curtis. This was fun because, like you know, I watch a lot of YouTube, and so it was nice to be able to talk about something that I watch.
Yeah, that's true. All right. Thanks to our listeners, and be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. That is a wrap. The Backup Wrap-Up is written, recorded, and produced by me, W. Curtis Preston. If you need backup or DR consulting, content generation, or expert witness work, check out backupcentral.com. You can also find links from my O'Reilly books on the same website. Remember, this is an independent podcast, and any opinions that you hear are those of the speaker and not necessarily an employer. Thanks for listening.